The horse threw up his head, reared, and launched itself towards the stars. Great silent streamers of blue and green flame hung from the roof of the world. Curtains of octarine glow danced slowly and majestically over the disk as the fire of the Aurora Coriolis, the vast discharge of magic from the disk's standing field, earthed itself in the green ice mountains of the hub. The central spire of Cori Celesti, home of the gods, was a 10-mile-high column of cold coruscating fire. It was a sight seen by few people, and Mort wasn't one of them, because he lay low over Binky's neck and clung on for his life as they pounded through the night sky ahead of a comet trail of steam. There were other mountains clustered around Cori. By comparison, they were no more than termite mounds, although in reality each one was a majestic assortment of cols, ridges, faces, cliffs, screes, and glaciers that any normal mountain range would be happy to associate with. Among the highest of them, at the end of a funnel-shaped valley, dwelt the Listeners. They were one of the oldest of the Disk's religious sects, although even the gods themselves were divided as to whether listening was really a proper religion. And all that prevented their temple being wiped out by a few well-aimed avalanches was the fact that even the gods were curious as to what it was that the listeners might hear. If there's one thing that really annoys a god, it's not knowing something. It'll take Mort several minutes to arrive. A row of dots would fill in the time nicely, but the reader will already be noticing the strange shape of the temple, curled like a great white ammonite at the end of the valley, and will probably want an explanation. The fact is that the listeners are trying to work out precisely what it was that the Creator said when he made the universe. The theory is quite straightforward. Clearly, nothing that the Creator makes could ever be destroyed, which means that the echoes of those first syllables must still be around somewhere, bouncing and rebounding off all the matter in the cosmos, but still audible to a really good listener. Eons ago, the listeners had found that ice and chance had carved this one valley into the perfect acoustic opposite of an echo valley, and had built their multi-chambered temple in the exact position that the one comfy chair always occupies in the home of a rabid hi-fi fanatic. Complex baffles caught and amplified the sound that was funneled up the Chile Valley, steering it ever inwards to the central chamber, where at any hour of the day or night, three monks always sat, listening. There were certain problems caused by the fact that they didn't hear only the subtle echoes of the first words, but every other sound made on the disc. In order to recognize the sound of the words, they had to learn to recognize all the other noises. This called for a certain talent, and a novice was only accepted for training if he could distinguish by sound alone, at a distance of 1,000 yards, which side a dropped coin landed. He wasn't actually accepted into the order until he could tell what color it was. And although the holy listeners were so remote, many people took the extremely long and dangerous path to their temple, travelling through frozen troll-haunted lands, fording swift icy rivers, climbing forbidding mountains, trekking across inhospitable tundra in order to climb the narrow stairway that led into the hidden valley and seek, with an open heart, the secret of being. And the monks would cry unto them, "Keep the bloody noise down!" Binky came through the mountain tops like a white blur, touching down in the snowy emptiness of a courtyard made spectral by the disco light from the sky. Mort leapt from his back and ran through the silent cloisters to the room where the 88th abbot lay dying, surrounded by his devout followers. Mort's footsteps boomed as he hurried across the intricate mosaic floor. The monks themselves wore woolen overshoes. He reached the bed and waited for a moment, leaning on the scythe until he could get his breath back. The abbot, who was small and totally bald and had more wrinkles than a sackful of prunes, opened his eyes.
"You're late,"
he whispered, and died. Mort swallowed, fought for breath, and brought the scythe around in a slow arc. Nevertheless, it was accurate enough. The abbot sat up, leaving his corpse behind.
"Not a moment too soon,"
he said, in a voice only Mort could hear.
"You had me worried for a moment there."
"Okay," said Mort, "only I've got a rush."
The abbot swung himself off the bed and walked towards Mort through the ranks of his bereaved followers.
"Don't rush off," he said. "I always look forward to these talks. What's happened to the usual fellow?"
"Usual fellow?" said Mort, bewildered.
"Tall chap. Black cloak. Doesn't get enough to eat by the look of him," said the abbot.
"Usual fellow? You mean death?" said Mort.
"That's him," said the abbot cheerfully.
Mort's mouth hung open.
"Die a lot, do you?"
he managed.